What's better in life than a bottle of wine, great food, and an amazing conversation?
My name is Kate Sullivan, and I am the host of To Dine For.
I'm a journalist, a foodie, a traveler with an appetite for the stories of people who are hungry for more. Dreamers, visionaries, artists, those who hustle hard in the direction they love. I travel with them to their favorite restaurant to hear how they did it. This show is a toast to them and their American dream. Thank you to the sponsors of To Dine For the podcast, American National and Spiritless. To Dine For the podcast is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you. For 115 years, American National has remained committed to helping people and communities make a real difference in their lives. American National supports great local community organizations led by the kind of people you hear about on To Dine For, people who are inspired to make a difference and inspire others in return. American National's philosophy is helping where it's needed helps us all. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write, and the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine. Spiritless supports the conscientious cocktailer who wants to live fully but drink differently. Their signature Kentucky 74 is a distilled, non-alcoholic spirit for your favorite bourbon cocktails. It's zero alcohol, zero guilt, and just 15 calories per serving. Whether you go completely spiritless or go halvesies with a foolproof bourbon to lower the ABV in your cocktail, you can get your bottle today at spiritless.com. Use promo code To Dine For to get free shipping. Welcome to Dine For the podcast. I'm Kate Sullivan. Join me as we meet some of the world's most creative and fascinating minds at their favorite restaurant. On today's episode is artist, photographer, and home cook, Erin Gleason.
You learn a lot about yourself when you move to a cabin in the woods, but I guess I'm a little bit more introverted than I realized. And I never expected that this new setting would totally inspire my work to go in a very different direction.
Erin Gleason left a big city life in Manhattan to carve out a simpler, quieter life in the woods of California, and massive success followed. She is a photographer and artist specializing in watercolors. She created The Forest Feast, a lifestyle brand around simple vegetarian dishes that she made for her family amidst the tall pine trees of Northern California. Four New York Times best-selling cookbooks later, and millions of loyal fans, Erin is a great example of carving out your own path in life and finding creative inspiration wherever life takes you, even a small cabin in the woods. Please enjoy my conversation with Erin Gleason. Erin, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Thank you so much for joining me on To Dine For the podcast.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
It looks like a gorgeous day in Northern California. I see the trees right behind you. What a beautiful, beautiful morning. I am fascinated by the fact that you were living in New York and really recreated your life. Can you explain your journey from New York to California and the shift in so many parts of your life?
After I was finished with grad school, I studied photography. I was working as a food photographer in New York. And my then fiance, now husband, got a job in California. And we decided to move to Silicon Valley. And for me, I had been in New York for almost 10 years, and my whole business was sort of, you know, based on my contacts there. And I was really nervous about kind of starting over in a new place. I think I was also ready for a change. So it was good to have something new, but I was very nervous. And when we came out just for a whirlwind weekend to try and find a place to live in California, we stumbled upon this little cabin that wasn't too far from his office, but felt really remote. And we just thought, you know, we don't have kids yet. We'll try this for a year or two. This looks like a fun adventure moving from Brooklyn to the woods, you know, a total 180. And I never expected that this new setting would totally inspire my work to go in a very different direction.
I think that you've set the stage beautifully. Can you using however you want to do this, can you explain just where you are visually? Because so much of your success with the Forest Feast and what you've been able to do, you, at least I get the feeling, is inspired by your surroundings. So can you explain your surroundings and where you are right at this moment?
Sure. I am sitting outside on the deck right now, looking out on a canyon of redwoods. And you can hear birds and, you know, the sky is blue and it's quiet. And I think that sort of quietude coming from Brooklyn was a stark contrast for me. I really love cities and I love being around people and food and surroundings, and suddenly stopping that and coming to a place that was really quiet and I didn't know anyone really here. I wasn't going out for drinks with friends or meeting people, or, you know, I didn't have any clients to please. And suddenly I was just in this very different place that I think that space gave me time to be creative in a way that I hadn't been in a very long time.
Oh, that's interesting. So you're saying, you know, not all, it wasn't just the change of scenery. It wasn't just the fact that you were now in this beautiful, idyllic setting, but it was the isolation and, in a way, the solitude that allowed you to get really creative.
Yes, I think it was.
That's interesting.
You learn a lot about yourself when you move to a cabin in the woods, but I guess I'm a little bit more introverted than I realized. But yeah, I think with so much time on my hands, right? I didn't have kids yet. And my husband was going to his new job every day. And I was just alone in the woods. And I was trying to set up meetings for myself in San Francisco. I was hoping to shoot other people's cookbooks or shoot for magazines. And so I was sending my portfolio. But I suddenly had so much time on my hands to experiment creatively in a way that I never had before. And also, I didn't have the, you know, we had newly moved, or we were newly married and sort of, you know, a combined household in a way that allowed for me not to have the pressure to make rent every month like I had before.
Right.
So that flexibility also allowed me to be creative because I didn't feel the monthly pressure.
No, that's
important.
Freelancer
in New York.
Yeah, that's a privilege and that's important to point out.
Yeah, a huge privilege. Yeah.
But I think people need to realize, so you're a trained photographer, but really the two things that have created this brand, the Forest Feast, are really your artwork, your watercolors, and then your cooking. So yes, you kind of intended to be a food photographer, and you are a food photographer, but it was your real artistry that has sort of brought it to life. So when you're in this midst of quiet and isolation, did you just start painting, or what inspired you to start cooking these simple vegetarian dishes?
Yeah, so I really was motivated to create a new type of portfolio to be able to show to editors in San Francisco. And I was having these meetings and I wanted to show them something new that I had created, because I had had a couple meetings showing them my portfolio and the feeling overall was that it looked too big city, too slick, like all shot on black or all shot on white, very kind of minimalist, like a lot of lighting kind of look was my aesthetic in the city. And, you know, California, they were like, show us more rustic wood. And I was like, I live in a cabin. I can do that.
That I can
no
do.
Problem.
That's my life.
So I just started shooting things outside. I started inside at first on our dining room table. And I was just sort of bored with like the table and the tablecloths and whatever. So you know, I was cooking things that came in our CSA box each week. So I was getting all this seasonal produce to kind of play around with.
And explain what a CSA box is.
Oh, yeah, sure. So it's a community supported agriculture, and it's a subscription where you pay a weekly fee and you get a box of what's grown that week.
So it's fresh, it's organic, it's locally sourced.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's a way to support farmers in your community. And we got one through my husband's office. And so he would bring it home once a week, and I would just try to make something new that I could photograph and put in my new portfolio. And my new portfolio was, it became a Tumblr blog. Remember the Tumblr days?
Yes, I do.
This is like 2011, 2012. Actually, yesterday was the anniversary of my first post ever on theforestfeast.com.
Wow, really? So this has been
9th anniversary. I think nine actually.
So yeah, it's been 9 years in the making. Yeah. What you create are simple vegetarian dishes that people can make at home. They're beautifully photographed. Watercolors go alongside of it. You have a very specific aesthetic. If I'm hearing you correctly, part of the inspiration for this was listening to the feedback you were receiving as you were trying to be a successful food photographer. And so you listened to the feedback and you adapted. But what's so interesting is that everything about this brand and this aesthetic seems like it aligns with who you are. Am I correct in that assumption?
I think so. And I think...
You are vegetarian, right?
I'm actually not vegetarian.
Really? So interesting.
I am a vegetarian cookbook author and I'm not vegetarian. To be clear, I am like 98% vegetarian.
Sure,
but,
you'd have to be. My gosh, you're cooking up a storm with vegetables.
I can't say I'm 100% vegetarian because I do try things once in a while. Like if there's, you know, if I'm served something or once in a while on like a holiday or... In certain occasions, it was while I was in New York and I was working with a lot of amazing chefs in New York City at the James Beard Foundation, and they were making all these things in the kitchen and I was shooting what they were making, and they would always try to like offer it to me to try. And it was like beautiful ingredients coming from, you know, very responsible sources. And after a while, I thought, okay, I can try it once in a while. It's okay.
Yes.
My reasons were more kind of environmental for not eating meat. And I still try to be really, you know, careful about that.
So let me ask you this. Was this the creation of the Forest Feast an attempt and a very successful one at creating a brand and all that goes with that in the sense that it speaks to where you are in your life right now? You are in the woods of Northern California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You are cooking vegetarian from locally sourced food. So does it speak maybe not necessarily to the heart of who you are, but to where you are in life at this moment?
Certainly, yeah. And I think that always shifts, right? And I think having that kind of quiet time to be creative and reflect, like really let that part of me shine. Mm-hmm. Because I think leaving the city and coming to the woods, and my idea of what I would become starting over was very different than what happened.
Sure.
But
you're probably more successful.
You just never know.
You never know, but don't you think?
I was hoping to shoot other people's cookbooks, and I'd never imagined that I would like create my own cookbooks, and you just never know.
I think that's what's so awesome about your story, though. Like, you probably achieved more success with this than you could have ever imagined. When you first started posting on the Forest Feast, as you said, 9 years ago, how did you get traction? How did you get so many eyeballs on your content, which is beautiful, but was there a secret to that sauce?
Yeah, I think I wasn't trying to do anything special or different. I wasn't trying to create any, you know, attention, really. I was just really wanted it to be a personal portfolio. But I think by sort of, like you were saying, making it true to myself, I was combining the painting and the photography together. So I wanted to be able to make it really visual. And I wanted to be able to, instead of just posting a photo of a dish, I thought I should share the recipe. And I was doing really simple recipes because I'm not a trained chef. Mm-hmm. I am certainly a home cook. I've cooked for a long time, but I'm not professionally trained.
But
so
your food is really delicious.
Oh, thank you.
The roasted carrots like blows my mind.
Oh,
I just
good.
Made that yesterday. I mean,
oh,
I make
yay,
that all
I
the
it.
Time. You have great recipes.
Oh, thank you. So I wanted to be able to share the recipe alongside the photo in a way that was really simple and quick to look at. So just sort of what intuitively came to me was to use handwriting and write it out because mm-hmm. I couldn't find a font I liked. Mm-hmm. And so I used my own handwriting and I sketched it on a piece of paper, and then I would scan it and put it on top of the photo. And then I wanted some sort of headlines for each recipe. And I started painting, like just hand lettering with watercolor, the title. So like roasted carrots would be in watercolor handwriting. And then in New York, I had taught Photoshop at the Fashion Institute of Technology. Mm. So Photoshop is sort of like my thing.
Yeah.
And so I was just combining all the scanned handwriting and painting and photography and combining them all in Photoshop. And so I think that aesthetic was very different than what was in sort of like the food blog world at the
sure.
time. So I think it easily
stood out.
It became very like Pinterest worthy,
yes,
as they say.
And it was unique. It was your own voice. It was unique. You were combining a lot of your skills, not only just photography and artwork, but design and graphic design. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was, on Tumblr to begin with. And I was very lucky that Tumblr, whoever works at Tumblr, I think I might know the person who did it, put me trending and as one of the suggested food blogs on Tumblr early on. And because of that, I got just a lot of followers really quick. Because
like
I
was how many? Give me an example.
Like hundreds? Over 100,000.
Oh my gosh.
Like early on.
Oh my gosh. You got just from that, you got, so it was about a lucky break.
It took
break.
A few months, but
it was a lucky break. You got caught the eye of the right person. You got the exposure that instantly gave you a very large audience.
Yeah.
So that really helped propel you forward.
Yeah, it did. And I think that and Pinterest really helped. And then, you know, the food blog world was different back then, and people started sharing it a lot on other blogs and sort of featuring me.
Yeah, it became viral. You went viral, basically, right?
In a small way,
No, that is not small. 100,000, my gosh. From there, at some point you realize, okay, this could become a book. And at this point you have four books, right? You have The Forest Feast, you have The Forest Feast Mediterranean, right? And what are the other two?
Then I have The Forest Feast Gatherings, which is an entertaining book.
Okay.
And The Forest Feast for Kids, which is an adaptation of my first book.
Oh, that's fantastic. And aren't you working on another one about travel?
I am, yeah. I'm doing The Forest Feast Road Trip now, which is a California cookbook.
Which is, all of it makes sense. Everything you do makes sense to where you are and what you're doing. So take me from, you've got this burgeoning blog that's doing well, and you decide to do a cookbook. How hard was that, and what was the most challenging part? Because you had all the material, but it seems, people always hear the story, oh, and then I wrote a cookbook. But I'm sure there were a lot of obstacles and difficulty along the way to creating this. Can you talk about that journey?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I am very, very fortunate in that it kind of just came to me. After about 6 months of having my Tumblr, I started getting a couple comments like, oh, can I buy your book? Or where's your book? And I was like,
that's a sign.
I don't have a book, but that's a good idea. And so I started to ruminate in my head, oh, a book, that would be really fun. But that seems like something that would be way off in my career. Maybe not now, And anyways, about 6 months in, a literary agent in New York reached out, just cold call reached out to me and asked if she could chat. And she said, I think you should turn your blog into a book and I'll help you do it. And so I just started working
with
her.
Would you go with that woman?
I went with her.
Wow.
I did because she repped a couple other really big bloggers that I respected who also had books. And anyway, she's been I'm still working with her, and she's
That was a meant to be moment.
Like one
wasn't
of the best career decisions I've made, but she came to me.
She came to you. Well, and so really the lesson in here is to put your content out there, try to do the best content you can, and let the chips fall where they may. And it looks like you've had a couple of strokes of what appears to be great luck. But it came with the talent that you had to back it up. So obviously the first cookbook, made the New York Times bestselling list, didn't it? Bestsellers list?
It did, yes.
So what was that moment like? We'll have more on this conversation in just a minute. But first, To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you. There's a funny thing about most insurance commercials, whether they feature lizards or birds or funny cartoon characters. It seems like they want you to think about anything but insurance. American National, on the other hand, has real local agents who get to know you, so they can help you reach better decisions about your insurance to make sure you're protecting what matters most to you. American National agents are part of your community. They're your neighbors. So whether it's solutions for your home, your small business, your farm, or your life, you can count on your local American National agent to make sure you get the discounts you deserve and the protection you need without paying for extras you don't. With American National, you get an ally, not just a web page. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write in the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine. If you're like me, there are times when you want to feel like you're having a fancy cocktail, but you don't actually want the alcohol. So I love Kentucky 74 from Spiritless. It's a distilled, non-alcoholic spirit for your favorite bourbon cocktails, but with just 15 calories per serving and none of the guilt. You can pre-order your bottle today at spiritless.com. Use the promo code TODINEFOR to get free shipping. Now back to our conversation.
So obviously the first cookbook, it was made the New York Times bestselling list, didn't it? Bestsellers list?
It did, yes.
So what was that moment like?
It was so exciting. You know, everybody's on East Coast time. So I got a very early morning phone call from a whole team at Abrams, my publisher. And they just, you know, called me first thing in the morning with like six people on the call. And they were just like, "Hey, your book made the Times. Yay." You know.
So for the people who are listening who have aspirations of making the New York Times bestselling list, what would you say contributes to that? Is it having a following and an audience that is just served up and ready to and sort of hungry for the content? Or is there something more?
You know, I don't know if I should speak as an expert on this because I'm not really sure. And as far as I can gather, nobody else is totally sure either. But I think that there are certain bookstores, independent bookstores that have like a representative that contributes their feedback and numbers to the bestsellers list board or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to get in with the independent booksellers early on. Mm-hmm. Some of your numbers are also determined by your pre-orders. So yes. Every time I have a book come out, like they really push the pre-orders because right. That contributes to your, so I think it has to happen like early on in the, or it's like for me, it happened early on in right after publication.
Sure.
But there were certain independent bookstores that they sort of pushed me to have signings at and.
This is your publisher.
Gather people at certain bookstores because they thought maybe those bookstores had some influence, but we don't really know.
So you've written 4 New York Times bestselling cookbooks. You're working on your 5th. Do you ever think to yourself, gosh, I am sick of the Forest Feast. I need a new mission. Or kind of where are you creatively?
Yeah. So, you know, the Forest Feast, the Forest Feast for Kids and the Forest Feast Gatherings, the first 3 books were all shot here at the cabin, all kind of home-based and inspired by living here. And for the 4th book, I think I was starting to look for some inspiration. Mm-hmm. So that's why I pitched it to my editor. How about if we do a travel book? So that was the Forest Feast Mediterranean that came out last year, 1 year ago at this time. And my husband had a sabbatical from work for 3 months. And so that allowed us to travel. And we just decided to go to the Mediterranean. And we spent time in Italy, France, Spain, and Portugal. Mm. And our kids were pretty little at the time. So nobody was in school that we had to worry about. They were 1 and 3.
I followed you. I followed the journey. I love it because I had just, I don't know if I had just come back from Portugal, but I was really taken, well, I love the Amalfi Coast and so much of the Mediterranean, and the food is so simple. It really lends itself to simple vegetarian dishes, right? That you can kind of capture the spirit. It's so different than America. There's a different palate. There's a different, like, and I mean that both, you know, palate as in what you're eating and palate as in colors. So it really lends itself to the Forest Feast. So it's interesting. You've done this incredible job of branding and creating this brand, and it will be very fascinating to see where it goes. Do you have an idea, or do you have creative inspirations that are taking you down a different path?
I'm working on it. Yeah. Let's see. Back in 2016, I did a whole line of stationery with my artwork on it. We had calendars and paper placemats and note cards and a meal planner, and different items those are really fun. So it's like, I'm always, doing all kinds of artwork that lends itself to be put on products or other things. And, so it was really fun to do that collaboration with my publisher. And from there, you know, around the house, I'm always putting my artwork on things like clothing and throw pillows and kids.
Ooh, you know, I feel a home
stuff,
line.
Stuff in the kids' room. I know, right?
So Target,
I
would love to do, where's Target?
Working on it. I would love to kind of branch out. I think sometimes I worry about, you know, putting more things out into the world that maybe, you know, more stuff. Mm-hmm. So I would want it to be very thoughtfully done and sustainably done. But, you know, I like the idea of bringing inspiration into people's homes in a way that makes them feel like they're living creatively. And, you know, the small, beautiful items around your home can kind of brighten your day and make you feel good. So I like that idea. But I would love to do like some sort of creative cooking show. Mm. I think that would be really fun.
You'd be great at that.
Where people could learn about photography mm-hmm. and painting and cooking really simple, colorful vegetarian meals.
What advice would you give to a creative, to an artist who's listening right now, who's maybe beginning their journey? You know, there's so much self-doubt, especially when you're first starting. What advice would you give them?
Yeah, I think don't be too attached to the final outcome and sort of stay focused on what feels really right to you and give yourself, you know, time to be creative. Mm-hmm. Back when I was in New York, I was always trying to do a photo related job, but I was always hustling. Like, you know, early on I was walking dogs and babysitting and working at a restaurant. Also, I could do like the unpaid internship with the photographer to learn things. And I think early on I imagined my dream would be to like be in New York City with a big studio and have, you know, commercial clients that came to me and like this whole thing. And that was sort of like my end goal. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to be like able to adapt.
Adaptable.
New things come up. And I think I like this version of my success better.
Yeah.
But I never even dreamed of this. Like,
wow.
I never even, so it's like, you know, sort of take it one step at a time and the rest will light up.
I think what needs to be emphasized is how hard you work. I don't know if people necessarily get that from
right.
talking to you, because you are so calm and thoughtful and deliberate about your demeanor. I think what's hidden in all this is the fact that you were willing to work all those jobs, that you were willing to take the internship with the photographer, you were doing design and teaching, and you mm-hmm. have acquired all these skills and you have hustled hard, even though mm-hmm. you're in the midst of tranquility and you,
right
you are still hustling
hard. A lot of years led up to this. That's true.
But I also think it's important that you have made space for creativity and that you have allowed your path to meander. And that is what has brought you the greatest success. I think mm-hmm. that's really fascinating. How do you personally stay creative, and how can you help others to do the same thing?
Yeah. So I've noticed that for myself, I do well when I'm by myself. So alone time and quiet is really helpful for me to kind of ruminate in my head to get new creative ideas. But I think also just contrast. Mm-hmm. So trying to go to a different place or be in nature or go for a walk or just sort of mix up your routine. You know, I guess everybody says that probably, but I think it's really true. Mm-hmm. Like I find that I get a lot of new ideas when I'm just on a walk by myself. And I just, you know, leave my phone behind and allow my mind to wander and look at things. And
not everyone will get that, but the people who do get that will really get it. So
yeah.
I think you're speaking to the right audience for the right
yeah.
time. Okay, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I want to talk about great food and indulgences. And I just wondered, you know, with you and you having, you know, taking such beautiful pictures of food all the time and creating these recipes, what is your greatest like Friday night splurge? Like what are you craving right now? Or what have you had lately that has just been off the charts?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, since we're home so much, we're doing so much cooking and barbecuing since it's warm. So Friday nights for us, we're Jewish and we always celebrate Shabbat on
yes.
Friday. So after the kids go to bed on Friday nights, we almost always have a sit-down, candlelit dinner, the two of us.
How beautiful.
Pretty
how
much
beautiful.
Every Friday. And we play music and, you know, try not to look at our phones or watch TV or anything. And we just try to have kind of a quiet evening. And one of my favorite things to eat in the whole world, like probably my favorite meal, is a barbecued meal with eggplant. So I love to slice the eggplant lengthwise, put olive oil, salt, and pepper, and put that on the grill with also some sliced onions that are grilled. And then I put all of that on a big plate. And I like to do kind of like a not really a salad, but sort of like a platter to mm-hmm. like put things together. So I have a little pile of arugula, mm-hmm. A little pile of really good cheese, like maybe burrata. Uh-huh. Or I love grilling halloumi cheese because you can put it right on the barbecue.
With a little honey.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yum. Mm-hmm. And then some really good, we're getting great tomatoes out of the garden right now. So some fresh tomatoes. And I have sort of like all these different colors, right? So the red tomatoes, the green arugula, the purple eggplant, the white cheese, and sort of this little platter of items. And I use the eggplants as a sort of taco. Oh, and I put things inside of it. So I make these little kind of taco wraps using that grilled eggplant. And I may maybe put like a little bit of truffle salt on there. Mm. And that with a glass of wine is probably my favorite meal.
That sounds
some really good crusty bread.
You got to have some crusty bread. That sounds delicious. I should also point out you do some dynamite cocktails, right? And they're all
They're
also inspired by herbs and different things that you find in the forest and different and produce. But yeah, you know, just keep doing what you're doing because it certainly inspires me. I'm so grateful to you for this conversation. And to share a little bit of your, I like to think of it as a bubble, because for people who want to follow you at the Forest Feast, they will see what we're talking about, that you are in the woods and you have twinkle lights and you're amidst the trees and you're dishing up this beautiful food. You've really created your own bubble that people find an enormous amount of inspiration from. And I hope that they will take that and create their own bubble and their own way to see the world, because it really is beautiful as an observer. So thank you, Erin, for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful day. We can talk soon. Okay, sound good?
Okay, sounds
okay.
good.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kate.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Dine For the Podcast. For more information on the show, the guests, and the podcast, head to todineforTV.com. You can find us on Instagram at todineforTV and Facebook at todinefor with Kate Sullivan. Thanks to the sponsors of To Dine For the Podcast, American National and Spiritless. Special thank you to producer and sound editor John Golner. To the loyal followers of this program, cheers, stay hungry, and stay inspired. I'll see you back at the table soon.